Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
What's up, fellas? Welcome back to Combos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. I'm so excited for today's episode. Today we have on Alexi Pappas, who you guys probably know her as the professional runner, and also she has created two movies. She just wrote a book called Bravey. She also did grad school at the University of Oregon, so we have met a couple times, and yeah, this episode was awesome. I really loved recording it, so stay tuned. Alexi, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you on. To get started, do you want to just give a rundown of who you are and what you're about?
Yes. So my name is Alexi Pappas, and I am a 2016 Olympian in long distance in the 10K. And I am an actress and now author of the book Bravey with a foreword by Maya Rudolph.
Man, I didn't even know how to describe you because you have so many different passions, which I find really inspiring. And that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because not only have I known you as a runner, but the interest that you have outside of running is something that I feel like is kind of like uncommon, I guess, in the running world. Like, you don't see that many filmmakers or writers that are coming out while also professionally running. So I'm excited to dive deep into your brain and have a good conversation. So to start off, I just kind of wanted to talk about like how you got your start in running and if you had any other hobbies growing up too.
Yeah. So I definitely was like a all around kid, meaning loved a lot of sports and also did a lot of theater and, you know, cared about having friends and all that stuff. And so the running really came about because it happened to be like my strength in a lot of these other sports. And I think I enjoyed other sports before I loved running. And I think that was because I loved the team element that I felt on like my soccer teams and my basketball and softball teams. And my running, I think, felt like, you know, I ran in middle school and for a part of high school, but it felt like I really didn't like begin my running, like the joyful part of it until college. And that was when I found a team at Dartmouth and a coach that felt kind of like that energy that I had in soccer and other sports that I so loved.
So you went to Dartmouth first and then you went to Oregon for your master's, I believe, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, what's interesting is that it's called a transfer, even if you graduated. And I think it's actually important to say, like, I graduated from Dartmouth. I had a cross country and an indoor season left, and I did a fifth year and grad school at Oregon. Because I think when we use that word transfer, it like sends this message. People were like, what didn't you like about Dartmouth? I'm like, I loved Dartmouth. And I've also loved my fifth year at Oregon.
I feel like those two schools had to have such like a different experience. I mean, just academics wise, athletics wise, obviously Oregon, huge emphasis on running. But how did you choose Dartmouth? Were you recruited out of high school?
I was recruited and I did a number of recruiting visits. And when I went to Dartmouth, I felt like it was this summer camp environment and it was like totally unfamiliar. You know, it was across the country. I grew up in the Bay Area, so it felt really different, but it felt like a place I could love. And also the team just felt like I wanted to hang out with these girls more. And I think that matters. It also felt like a school where I would be happy if I were or were not, was not running. And that was so important to me. Because I think had I felt too much pressure on the running, it would have like, you know, imploded on me. And I think that that is important because some people are ready for like an Oregon when they're 18 years old, but I was not. I was ready for like a Dartmouth, what it was at the time, which was like an up and coming team, you know?
Did you have a hard time balancing the academic side of it with running? Because I can't even imagine going to like an Ivy League school and running full time? I feel like you just have to be so busy.
I did have trouble. I don't even think I can blame the running so much as I was unprepared for the academic rigor at Dartmouth. And I was, you know, I failed like several tests in the first term. And I remember calling my dad and being like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not good at running right now. Cause I was like not in great running shape when I got there because I'd played soccer for the last 2 years of high school. So I was like strong and durable, but I wasn't like aerobically fit. And then these classes were just like killing me, honestly. And I think I really had to rely on my ability to like work hard, where some people, I think when they go into those schools, they've been more prepared for the academic setting. And so maybe it's even easier than their prep high schools, but for me, it was certainly harder. And I had to, you know, sit down with my professors and go through every answer on a test and figure out why was I choosing the second best answer and not the best answer. And it felt very humbling, but also kind of empowering because I could learn how to learn. And I did eventually graduate in like the top, I don't know, like 5% of my class, top of the English program. It just took a lot of hard work, you know?
That's really impressive. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And then I really like what you said about liking, like enjoying the school outside of running too, because I feel like a lot of people, if they're going into schools being recruited for sports, it's like, that's their main focus. And I know it is a huge part of the college experience if you're competing at any division, but it is so important to like the school beyond the sports aspects, because say you get injured sometime, you're gonna spend time not with the team and you're gonna have to find things outside of running or outside of the sport that you play to have interest in, or like, I don't know, you spend so much time in your classes and stuff too, you need to enjoy the area, enjoy the atmosphere, I guess. So I really like that point that you made.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it actually the first cross country meet that our team had, I was not on the travel squad. You know, technically that was like that was my red shirt season because I had shin splints because I was really out of shape. And so I wasn't allowed to travel to this first race. And I remember my only friends that I had made were on the cross country team during preseason. And so I was really lonely. And I got all these emails that were, asking for students to come out and audition for this improv group. And I went because I was like, well, I don't really have anything to do this weekend. I'm not at the meet. And so I went and auditioned, and that became like a really important piece to my experience. And it was a good counterbalance to the running because, you know, improv theater, while we really, you know, wanted to be good and took our craft seriously. And this was the same group that Rachel Dratch and Mindy Kaling were in years prior, it was still really different than the running. And I think it was a good like social and other, you know, it was just a good counterbalance, you know? Yeah,
definitely good to focus on something else that you enjoy and finding like other passions outside of running. But I know it can be so hard to like find the time to do that if you're so focused on school and running. But I feel like it is such an important thing to do, especially to just like lead you into the next part of life too. I don't know, just finding other things outside of your sport, which I've talked about a lot on this podcast, but.
Well, and I think you can relate because, you know, the campus was sort of set up for that because, you know, it reminded me a little bit of the Oregon campus. At Oregon, the campus was small compared to the amount of students. And so I actually think, you know, and Dartmouth's campus was small and the school was smaller than Oregon, but there was because it was small, getting from one thing to the other was like possible. It's not like you're driving across the city. And so I think college is a really unique time in that a lot of campuses are set up so that you might be able to like get from practice to rehearsal within like 5 minutes or something, you know?
Yeah.
So it was set up for that a little bit too.
Yeah, that's super nice. When did you decide to go to Oregon? Like what made you decide? Cause that is like a big switch, but you see a lot of people from the Ivy League going to Oregon. So.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is seeing people do it before you. And I remember I was really set and all ready to go to grad school for poetry. And I got into some of the top programs in the country that were like fully funded. And that felt like a very safe and prestigious path. And to be honest, it was one of my teammates who also did a fifth year at Oregon Matt, who told me that I might, you know, why don't you think about Oregon? And he was all in the running, you know, environment. This was like when social media was just starting. So like, I didn't even know that much. And he was like, why don't you think about this? And to be honest, it was the people who were advising me in the creative world. So like my poetry advisor, who really encouraged me to pursue this like running path while I had this door open, while I had my body like this. And I talk about this in my book, Bravey, but that confidence from the creative side was so important. And that was actually, it was really unexpected because I expected that it would take, you know, my running coach, Mark Coogan, pushing me towards Oregon to have the courage to do it. But it was actually the opposite. It was having courage from the mentors in the creative world. And for me, it was such a privilege because my one point at Oregon meant so much, like my one team point, right? It meant the difference between us winning or losing a national title, like literally. And that was a real gift. But talk about the differences. You know, I have this tattoo behind my ear that is a lone pine, and it's a Dartmouth lone pine. And I got it with my teammates, including Abby D'Agostino, who we ran in the national championship with the DMR my senior year at Dartmouth. And the reason why we got this tattoo was because we did not expect to go to nationals. We certainly did not expect a podium, and we got third. And we were so happy. Like, we were crying on the podium. Like, we were so happy because it was like not a likely scenario that we even made it to the nationals. And I remember the Oregon girls were there that I was going to join their team in a couple months, and they got second to Washington, and they did not show up to the award ceremony. And it was really, I think it was a big moment. And I remember Vin turning to them and saying, look at those Dartmouth girls. You'd think they won the world. Like, you guys need to get up there. And that's where I understood the difference in the expectation on the athletic side between the two schools, because here we got third, and we were just like bawling our eyes out. Now I have a permanent tattoo on my head because of it. And this team that I was about to join had such a higher expectation for themselves, and that's okay. It just is different, right?
How did you adapt to that then?
Well, I think I was mature enough at that point and good enough and, you know, stable enough, like as a person and an athlete, to step into that arena. And again, I think it goes back to like knowing yourself and knowing that it's good to go into worlds that we feel like are maybe a half step ahead of us, but not five steps ahead of where we are, right? So like, it's nice to have something to grow into, but if I had gone to Oregon 3 years earlier, I know I would have drowned. Like, I wasn't ready. And when I did the fifth year, I was ready. I was ready to like contribute and to just be a real add, which I think a fifth year, it should be someone, you should just want to add, right, to a team. And I also saw how fifth years could detract if they were not in a generous place in their life, if they were not able to like be stable, right? And that's a really tricky dynamic.
Yeah, man, you have like such a mature way of looking at it. I wish I looked at it like that as like an 18-year-old, you know, going into college. But I guess, but
I didn't when I was 18. Like, I was going to parties and doing a lot of other things when I was 18, and that's why I didn't put myself in the environment where I wouldn't have just, it would have felt too daunting, I think, at that age.
I feel like a lot of people don't really realize that until you're in the situation too. It's like, you don't know what, I don't know. I mean, at least I didn't know when I was going to college. I didn't really know what to expect. Everything is just kind of like, I don't know, you figure it out freshman year, I guess. That's why it's such a big adjustment year for a lot of people.
And you hope that there's going to be like leadership or captains or people that can like help you, because what else do you know other than the guidance of those people, right?
Yeah, exactly. What was your favorite? This is like for my own bias. What was your favorite experience at Oregon that you had?
Oh my gosh. I was so happy there. Like, I know that people have a range of experiences there, and mine was really, really positive. I think, winning the national title in cross country was a really cool moment because it's such a team sport, and it was so important that each of us ran like our own races with integrity and in a different way. Like I ran a really different tactical race than Jordan in that race, even though I only finished like, you know, a handful of places behind her. I started so far back, and like, I don't know, I just remember like feeling so lucky to be a part of something that like I could matter in. And that's something that I also talk about in the book, is that like I really, really want to matter, and I really want to be a part of teams and projects where like I can contribute. And I think that was like the manifestation of that, where like I did matter and I had a whole team around me where each of us were like kind of dying out there for each other, you know?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And it's hard to find kind of that team aspect in the individual sport. So when you have, I mean, days like that, where everyone comes together on the same day and like you accomplish something together, I feel like it just means so much more than it does to like have an individually good race. I don't know, at least to me. I mean, I'm a team person as well, so.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally different. And even in individual, like leaning races, like let's say you're running the 5K and your teammates running the 10K, or like if there's any way for us all to like spin it somehow so that it's still a team, it's always better.
Yeah.
Like it's always better to feel like you're out there with people. And it's interesting because I do think that after college, all we're ever trying to recreate is that feeling of team, and it can be crafted, but it's just, I wish for everybody who wants for themselves that team NCAA experience that they have it. And I hope that everybody gets like a good one, because the good version of it is really, really unmatched, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That's what Marisa, our coach, would always talk about, is everyone after college is trying to recreate that team environment. And I feel like professional teams are doing a better job of it now. I mean, you see a lot of different groups that are forming. So do you think it's improved over the years?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's so many more teams that people can be a part of now. Like the barrier to find that is so much lower, and that's great. It's just very cool. So yes, it is more and more abundant.
Yeah. That's awesome. Have you seen the new Hayward Field? Have you been able to go around in it?
I want to go so badly. Like we, I've been there, you know, I think the last time I went was like a part of my honeymoon. We swung through Eugene because I love Eugene. I love it.
Yeah.
And we wanted to go back this year, and we had plans like several times because we have dear friends there, but just like, it didn't make sense to travel there. Right. It didn't feel responsible. And I think now it's the next place I would love to go back, you know?
Yeah, man, it is wild. It yeah, sticks out on campus. It's crazy. It's huge.
Wow. Yeah. Is it like, I mean, you know, I think that was going to happen, I think, at some point. And it's interesting. Well, what's fun now is that Tracktown, the movie I made, is like a historical relic now, because there's so much in the old Hayward Field that
yep.
that movie takes place in. So it's fun to at least have that as like a memory.
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about the Tracktown movie. Like, what made you decide to film it? That's such a crazy endeavor that I can't even imagine, like, everything that has to go in that. And I watched it, and it was so fun to watch, probably because I'm biased, because, I mean, at the time, I lived in Eugene, and I was also commuting at the University of Oregon. So I think I was just, I had a special place. It had a special place in my heart, but.
That's great. Well, that just means that the movie was, like, specific and spoke to, like, a real experience. And I think, you know, we made it for a number of reasons. One, it was like a story that I could uniquely tell. And that's always important when you're trying to like make a career in an industry where, you know, you need to make something that you can uniquely make. And so that was like a world that I had unique access to. And also I was a part of that community enough that we could film in places that people can't film normally. Like to be in the, you know, in the underwater treadmills, you know, at the cast is like a big deal. Like nobody brings cameras in there, like that, no way. And so it was a really like special opportunity. And also I think it was a story that I don't think I could tell forever. Like today, it would be harder for me to access that emotional core of like chasing an Olympic dream, living in Eugene. You know, I haven't lived there for a while. And so I think it was one of those things that like, I told it when I could. And it was also a learning by doing thing. And I think you could probably relate to that too, of you know, we can go to school to learn certain things, but it's also important to just try a thing. And that was like my first big movie that I wrote and directed and starred in and produced. And it was just a big education too. And Eugene is a great place to learn. Like it's a great place to grow. And so I felt kind of safe doing it there because it was like, you know, a nice, like fertile, safe, homey plot of soil.
Yeah. It's not like it's LA and you're trying to film in LA.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What did you learn from making that movie? Like, what was your one takeaway?
I think I learned that we'll always be prouder of something in retrospect, because I think I was really hard on myself, you know, during the process. And even, you know, when the movie came out, I was like, oh, there's so many things we could have done differently. And yes, like learn those lessons. But also I've been more and more proud of that movie as years go by, because I understand just like that was me trying my absolute best at that time. And that's all anything is that we make. It's not an example of something we would make when 10 years later. It's exactly what it was. And so I think it taught me to like try my best in any moment that I'm in and assume that that is genuinely my best. And it also taught me that I could make something happen, because it was nothing. It was just an idea, and we made it all happen, and it was totally worth it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what is the first step? Like, say someone has an idea, they're like, I want to make a movie. Where do they go from there?
Yeah, well, there's two ways I think that people go about it. One is trying to like work with a bigger team from the start. Like you can, movies, like huge movies start at studios, like a Marvel movie or like any, you know, a lot of movies that we see, they start with a bigger team and a studio that takes it on. And that's wonderful. But if you're in the position that we were in, where we weren't even in a conversation where we could sit down with a studio, you can also make it yourself. And I think it starts with figuring out what your goal is and what is the minimum amount of resources you need to get to that goal. So, you know, we needed to make the movie we could make. And so I think for anybody trying to make something like that, figure out what you can make given like your reach at that moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. How did that movie compare to the other movie that you made, The Olympic Dreams, which I have yet to watch, but it looks so cool. I literally just watched the trailer. I was like, okay, I'm definitely watching this on Amazon later.
Yes. So they were really different. Olympic Dreams, we shot in the Olympic Village at a real Olympics, and we made it with Nick Kroll, and we made it with actually a much smaller crew than Tracktown, because you can't bring that many people into the village. And so it was just Jeremy, Nick Kroll, and myself. And so even though it was a bigger movie project, it was a smaller crew. And again, like I feel like every step of the way in my career, I've been able to grow to the point where like more people are willing to hear the idea and I can wear fewer hats. So with Tracktown, I, you know, raised all the money and wrote all the scripts and blah, blah, blah. Like I did everything. And now, you know, with Olympic Dreams, I had bigger team available to me. So the Olympics was super supportive, and, you know, other teammates came on, you know, back to our theme of teammates. And the movie, you know, did it maybe reached a bigger audience, and it's opened the door for now a television show that we're working on. Really exciting. Still sort of secret, but it's just been a real privilege to have the goal of every project be that it is good and speaks to, you know, the authentic world that it's in, but it also allows us to keep growing.
Man, it's so cool that you can literally make two movies. That's something that just blows my mind. And also you just wrote a book, which is very exciting. And something I also know nothing about is writing a book. So what was the catalyst for writing the book?
Yeah. The book came about after, right around the Olympics, like right after. And it was just like, I knew that I had certain experiences in my life, like from really tough experiences with my mom and her depression and her like suicide, to my own, you know, extreme highs at the Olympics and other pinnacles. And I also like knew that I love words and I have a grasp over words. And that felt like something that went beyond the capability of sharing on social media. and it did feel like appropriate to try this medium. I love memoirs. Like, I love them. I soak them up like mentors, you know? And I think if I could add to that tradition and just, you know, do my best with it, I wanted to try that. And just like Tracktown, I think I didn't want to assume that I would feel that way forever, that I would feel like writing it forever. And because I felt that I could, and I had people who are willing to team up and make it happen, I took, you know, that moment to do it.
What has been the most rewarding out of all three? I mean, I know Bravey's pretty recent, but what do you think so far?
Honestly, the book, like hands down, the book. I mean, if one of the most meaningful things is there are a few older people that have reached out that say that it speaks to them, and that's amazing. But I think it's the teenagers. There have been like a few really, really amazing messages I've gotten where these teenage Bravies are like, look, I hate reading books. Like, I don't like books. And I could not put your book down. And I love the idea that it was like this thing to them where they like stayed up all night and it felt like this like conversation between us. And it was like permission for them to both believe in themselves with whatever they wanted to do, but also feel like they could come from any vantage point and feel anything in this moment. Cause we all know teenage years feel like a roller coaster, and that they could, you know, relate to me. Yeah. And so I think that's been the most meaningful moment, is being like, this book speaks to people that books don't always speak to, you know?
Do you want to give like a little summary of what the book kind of goes through, like the progression?
Yeah. So it's a memoir and essays, which is my favorite format because it doesn't have a narrative arc. It's more of an emotional arc. And it starts with losing my mom at a really young age and seeing some really powerfully difficult stuff with her, and having that understanding of the world that was like challenging from the start of like, wow, this person left and she chose to leave. And like, what does that mean for me? And what does that mean about the world? Like, this world that I'm now entering, is the world like a terrible place that's going to keep taking things from me? And I think I had that choice. What am I going to suppose to like take everything I could from the world and see it as an abundant place? And so the book takes us through like finding female mentors and like really like fishing for them, like not just coming upon them, but like seeking them out. And I think podcasts, audiobooks, like those are in the roster of mentors for me, because when I've not been in the same room as people that I admire, I put myself in a room with them by listening to their voice and by seeking them out in this kind of way. And then the book, you know, it takes us through some fun, funny, awkward memories, like from athletic, you know, to social, to boys, to otherwise, you know, everything. And then, you know, we come to the Olympics. And I think what I learned is that I would have to like come to a new understanding of like my own mental health. And I experienced a post-Olympic depression that I've since shared about, but did not really share until I wrote the book. And I developed a vocabulary to see my brain as a body part. And I think that was another motivation to write this book, was to share the vocabulary that might help people see their situation differently, whether it's like they're chasing a dream or they feel like, you know, they want to die, you know? So the book has a big emotional arc, and I think there's something in there for everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Green Chef. Green Chef is the first USDA certified organic meal kit company. They make eating well easy and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. So whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, or just looking to eat healthier, there's a range of recipes to suit any kind of diet or preference. The ingredients come pre-measured, perfectly portioned, and mostly prepped, so you can spend less time stressing and more time enjoying delicious home-cooked meals. You guys already know, I absolutely love Green Chef. When my Green Chef box arrives, I get so excited because I know that night I'm about to whip up a dinner. It's gonna make me feel like a chef. It's gonna take like 30 minutes and the meals just taste so freaking good. They're just so flavorful, like way more flavorful than anything I can make on my own, because, you know, I don't like to branch out when I'm just making my meals, but when my Green Chef box comes, ooh, We are chefing it up in the kitchen, and it's tastes gourmet. Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh, and with a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone. I like to switch between the brands depending on how my taste buds change. If you guys are interested, go to greenchef.com/90coldbrew and use code 90coldbrew to get $90 off, including free shipping. That is greenchef.com/90coldbrew and use code 90coldbrew to get $90 off, including free shipping. You came out with that New York Times, what do you call it? Like a video?
Pop doc. Yes.
Pop doc. Yeah. That was really empowering or like inspiring to a lot of people, I think, in the running world and beyond. I mean, just any sport regardless. Like I know a lot of runners who have gone through something similar, but no one has really talked about it. And I think, I don't know if it's like taboo, but the mental health side of professional sports or like even collegiate sports, I feel like is something that it's starting to come to more of a common topic to talk about. But I feel like the piece that you put out was just so powerful. And I think it had a big impact on a lot of people. I mean, I know it did me. It had a big impact on me. So I'm sure that a lot of people felt the same way. Like what, I know the book you said inspired you, but what like made you want to put it in the New York Times?
Yeah, I think just knowing that I was aware that people are talking about it more and that we're breaking down like the stigma more, but I felt like there was a lack of like solutions. There was just like this feeling of let's make sure people know this exists, which is step one, right? Yeah. So that's awareness and like making it more normal to talk about or feeling those things, that's great. But I needed to learn tools when I felt that way to get out of it. And I think that flip of the switch in the mind that I had about learning that my brain was just a body part and it could get injured like any other and it could heal like any other was a total like visual switch in my mind. And so I wanted to share that with the hopes that if somebody's in that situation or even before, because I think like if I understood it before, I wouldn't have been so afraid of it happening to me. And if I had had like little symptoms, I would have approached it more like a physical injury where, look, if I don't sleep one night or if my like hip feels weird, I'm not going to just do the same workout and press through. And if I had that metaphor for my brain where these little tasks or these little symptoms, sorry, might indicate like I need to pause, I probably would have paused sooner, just yeah. like we do with our body, hopefully, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I know like you've been outspoken about having a journey of your own. I mean, I don't know if you felt like you didn't have vocabulary or if you felt like you were alone or like what was your, you know, experience like, because you are an amazing athlete, but I also think you have more that you've contributed to the world since by sharing about your own like journeys, you know?
Yeah. What I think for me, what I wish I had, especially in college, was just like someone to talk about the mental health side with. And I know we had a sports psychologist at one point, but I honestly don't think it was enough. And like, I don't think many people knew about it either. And we also didn't have like a running sports, like a running specific one, which I mean, all sports are so different in the struggles that people go through. And I didn't start seeing the sports psychologist that we had in our like Jaqua Center until like literally 1 month before I graduated, because I didn't even know it existed. And I felt so alone for so long. Just, I had a lot of like body image issues. That was the number one thing I struggled with. And then when I started posting on social media, like it only got worse because then I had outside eyes of people like commenting on stuff. And that's when I like made the effort. I was like, maybe I should go like talk to someone about this, because I was like, it was something I struggled with every single day. And I didn't feel like it was talked about well enough. And I don't know, like on our team, like people didn't really talk about it. And it was all about physical injuries. No one was talking about the mental side other than like, all right, let's mentally prepare to do well at this race, you know?
Yeah. The mental side has like two sides to it. There's like the performance side, which is great, and you need that if you're even okay enough to like dance in that conversation. But before that, you need safety and like the basic like feeling that you're, you know, okay. And yeah. So it sounds like some of us like had experiences where we like thought our goal was like fitness and performance when there was something like much more needed, which was a goal to just be healthy, what yeah. mentally and physically.
Yeah, exactly. Because like I could be the fittest I've ever been. I literally like was the fittest I've ever been in college, and I was so like just not happy. And I don't even know really what caused it, but it was like, I don't know. I mean, I've crawled out of it now, but I think it's just, I went through some like really hard times in college. So I just don't want people to feel alone like I did. And I don't want to like talk bad about any of like my teammates or my coaches, because no one even knew, because I wasn't talking about it. I just want, from my experience, the reason why I put out so much stuff on like the internet or share my experiences, because I want other people to feel like, you know what, you're not the only one going through this situation, though I may not have all the tips to get out of it. That's what I really loved about your videos. You actually like provided, you know, resources and helpful things to help you get out of the situation, because a lot of what I've been doing or what I've done over the years is just kind of share my experience, and I'm still learning. I mean, I'm only 24. I'm still learning how to like navigate all this, navigate post-college life. So yeah, I don't know. I really resonated with your video though, and I know a lot of other people did too. So
thank you. Well, I think it's cool because you have kind of, I think you've demonstrated by your way of your actions how people can, you know, shift how they feel, because it really isn't, I think what I learned is that it really isn't possible to make ourselves feel anything different. Like feelings can't be shifted by forcing them, but we can like adjust our actions. And I think what's fun is seeing you explore this medium and the other things that you've been doing as like ways to see if they help the world and also help you. And I'm sure that they do both, you know?
Yeah, exactly. One thing I was curious about for you is like, you're a huge role model in the running world and beyond. And how do you deal with that? Like, say when you were going through the post-Olympic era, how did you deal with being a role model, but feeling the way that you felt and like going through something so hard as depression?
That was the worst part, to be honest, was feeling different. Feeling like the way the world saw me did not match how I felt about myself. And I think that is one of the hardest things about like mental illness, because it's like this invisible thing. And if we feel ashamed about it, or we feel like it's our fault, or we really don't understand that it's an injury, then we truly feel like we are spoiled and that we're choosing this. Like if we don't see it as an injury, then it's easy to take blame. And that's what I did for so long, you know, longer than I should have, longer than I needed to. And that was because I did not understand that I was injured, and I didn't understand that it was an injury. And so it was hard because I kept trying to like perform to the world, and the world will have you if like they admire you, they'll have you. And it's not the world might not detect, you know, what you're able to hide. And I don't think it was the world's like business to know when I was going through it. Like, it's not everybody's business. If you are trying to like heal yourself and you really like, it doesn't serve you to share, that's fine. But I do think I, for a long time, put myself in positions to like compromise that healing because I was trying so hard to maintain whatever that was, not realizing that the foundation of me was like just not there. Yeah. And so I think, you know, and when I think about my mom, I think it was the same thing for her, where she was trying to be like a mom and a working mom and just a lot of things while she was sick. And this was like during a time when mental illness was even less, you know, it was very taboo, and that crushed her, I think. So now I think we are moving in a direction where like, if we can accept it as an injury, then we can approach it like an injury where, you know, if you have a torn tendon or broken leg, it's fine if you don't like share it on your social media. Not every athlete does, but it is important to share it with like your coach, your family. It's hard to get help, right? And I think those are the steps that I'm hoping people are able to take with more, you know, kindness to themselves.
Yeah. What was like the catalyst for you deciding that it's an injury, or that maybe that you need to get help for this?
Yeah. So I got help because my dad, who had seen what my mom went through, made me get help. So it was not like I was running to get help. I was not, and I just didn't understand that I needed it. So he made my appointments. I went, and the understanding about the injury metaphor was from that doctor. He like sat me down. He was like, look, you know, based on what you've told me, I was really honest with him because I just like didn't have anything to lose. He was a total stranger. I was like, whatever, here's everything that's coming out of my brain. And he was like, you are sick and you have an injury. It's like a scratch on your brain and it's okay. It's like when you fall down, you get a scratch, it is injured and it's going to take some time, but it can heal. And I think that like totally flipped the switch for me because I was like, oh, I can heal. Like I expect to heal. And mostly when you feel that way, the depression or whatever mental illness, you usually feel like you're going to feel that way forever. And so that was the big shift, was like, oh no, I can heal. And also I can expect that it's going to take time. So I'm not going to wake up every day so offended that I still feel sad, but I am going to focus on the actions that will eventually lead me out of that sadness.
It's such a unique way to look at it. And I feel like it will help a lot of people, especially runners who have this mindset of like, they know what a physical injury feels like, and maybe they don't know how to navigate the mental health side of things. So I think it just puts it into such good perspective for athletes, especially.
I think like everything. Like if you're like, what do I do? And you're like, well, what would you do if your leg was hurt? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like X, Y, Z, you do X, Y, and Z, you know?
So what steps did you take? Like you were diagnosed with the injury, let's say.
The injury.
And so what steps did you do?
Well, I think, so like I learned that I was injured. And so I shifted my focus, as we do with a physical injury, from focusing on like performance and like, you know, fitness, if you will, right, to health. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I just need to be healthy in my mind. And this is my number one goal. And I think that's what people who are injured in their like leg or whatever should also do. And some of us have trouble flipping that switch. And we try to do two things at once. We're like, we want to stay fit and heal. And it's like, well, make sure your priorities are in line. So I switched my priorities, and my psychologist, he was the same. He did both. He became my coach, and I went and saw him 3 times a week or more. And it was like, this is practice. And I did what he said, and not everything resonated with me. Just like when we are healing an injury, not every rehab exercise is going to feel like helpful to you, right? And that's okay. But I tried the things that he told me, and I just tried to like visualize myself as like a soup that had some ingredients that we were putting in, and then it was going to take time. And so I just kept showing up, and I was sad every day, but I was less offended by my sadness because I knew I was like on a journey, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it helped so much to be like, this is my program now. This is my Olympic dream, you know?
When did you think you started seeing improvements?
Yeah. So I started feeling like not great, like, you know, December, January of 2017, I didn't get help for several months. And then I got help, you know, I want to say like April-ish, like it was a couple months. And then I started to see and feel hope after about 3 months of like, I started to feel like, this glimmer of like, oh, I have moments where I don't feel so bad. And so it took a couple months, which is not so long in the scheme of a lifetime. It felt long, but you know, I think in July or so, I started to have these like hopeful moments, which became mm-hmm. hopeful hours, which became hopeful days. And so, yeah, it took a couple months. And then, you know, from there, it just started to like become more, I started to feel like lighter in the mind, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And I'm so glad that you've been able to share all of this with everyone, because I'm sure you've inspired so many people. And yeah, I don't know. It just means a lot to me personally too. So that's especially why I wanted to have you on the podcast. I was like, I need to have her on because I'm trying to get people that inspire me, regardless if it's running or not, but like just in day-to-day life. And you're definitely someone that fits that bill in my book. So
I like that you're like, I want to surround myself with people that I want to surround myself with. And you do. Like, why wouldn't you? It's great.
Exactly. To close out the episode, I have some listener questions that people ask on our Instagram. So we'll just run through them really quick. Do you have any plans after your running career that you know of?
Yeah. So I'm still running and I have eyes on just making that marathon feel like my friend. And then I want to just, you know, keep doing my acting and film work. And I love acting. I mean, it feels like a performance, just like running does. It feels like you're part of a team. So like, it doesn't feel so different to me, but it does feel like something I'm like endlessly curious about.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I'm excited to see what that has in store for you. And the marathon, of course, too, tackling that beast. What is something that makes you happy and motivated?
Well, something that makes me happy is cooking. It's like the number one thing that restores my willpower. And I know that like whenever I'm feeling like overcooked or just adrenally fatigued, I just need to like cook something or just know that something's cooking. And I think that is something that I like really, really enjoy. And watching, you know, Top Chef and these like competition shows, I like those. And then something that makes me feel motivated is listening, like getting some perspective. So like listening to an interview with someone I admire, watching a really like amazing movie. So I think just like I draw inspiration from outside of myself, and that really helps.
Nice. That's awesome. Do you have any tips for like race anxiety?
Yeah. Well, I think to take some time a couple days before your race and just try to anticipate the moments that you think will be challenging for you. Like if it's a course, you know, if it's a road race, maybe it's like a hill or something like that. And just try to give yourself the chance to watch yourself already go through those moments before the race, so that when you get to those moments, you've already like conquered them in your mind. And I think that's like one thing we can do. That's one thing. And second thing, I mean, all these things are about like controlling what you can control, like laying out your race uniform, like preparing all the meals that you're going to have for the 48 hours before, or just like as much as you can, like grounding your preparation in like something very real. And like, because nervousness, first of all, is cousin to excitement, and it just means it can be a good thing. But second of all, I think it can feel like a cloud when everything's up above us. We're like, let's just like nail this down. Like, what am I eating? Like, where are my clothes? When am I going to do my shakeout run? Like, nailing it down makes things feel much less daunting, you know? Mm-hmm. And then in the race, knowing that we don't know how other people feel. I think so often we assume that we're feeling the most pain, and it's probably not true. And so just like accept like now and never think again that you're in the most pain. You just probably aren't. And it's not useful. It's not useful, right?
Yeah. This is the last one. What is your biggest success that you've had in your life?
Well, I think, you know, the right answer would be like overcoming my depression, because that's like a more internal thing. You know, I'm trying to shift my focus a little bit more from being overly fixated on my external accomplishments. So I do think that that was my biggest success, because I'm like alive and able to tell the story. But I am really, really proud of this book, because I think it actually communicates what I intended it to. And that can be really hard when we're trying to like, you know, we could think one thing and experience one thing, but to try to get other people to experience it with you, whether it's just a conversation or a book or a movie, is really, really hard. And I'm really, really proud of that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to read it. I'm literally about to go download it off of Apple Books or whatever.
Do it.
I literally am after this like podcast.
Tell me, because I feel like you're you are of the exact age where I'm like, if this speaks to you, that is the greatest gift of all, honestly. Cause I care deeply about like younger Bravies. I really do. Cause I know like what it feels like to be that age. Like I just want to know what to do, or like, I want something, I want someone to help, you know?
Well, I'll let you know my thoughts. I'll probably finish it in like one day. I just know myself. If I'm into a book, I'll finish it in a day. So I'm excited. Well, the last thing, do you have any, do you have like one piece of advice that you would give someone that's younger, or like your younger self?
Yes. I think that you will not feel the way you feel right now forever. Meaning like we do grow and change. Try to have only lessons, meaning like no, try to see any regret you might think is a regret as like truly just a lesson. And try, this is the hardest one, to see whatever you're going through now from the vantage point of like your later self, because I think often our later selves are like so proud and nostalgic of our younger selves. And we're like, oh, that was like really something. And like, I'm trying, and it's so hard to like think about that more in the present, where I'm like, this is adorable how hard I'm trying and how much this sort of sucks, like whatever it is, or like is so great, you know? And so I think the more we can like just try to like amuse in our current state, the better, because we're always going to feel, I think we'll feel more proud later on. So just like try and have like drop more feeling of that in the present.
I love that so much. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This is such a good conversation. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot out of it, including me, selfishly. So
get it. Keep getting it. You go mentor fishing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where can people like follow you at? I'm sure most people probably already do follow you that are listening to this, but where can they find you?
They can find me on my Instagram at Alexi Pappas, A-L-E-X-I. P-A-P-P-A-S.
And go check out her new book, Bravey. I'm about to go read it right now, so you can join me. Thank you, Alexi, for coming on. To close out the episode, can we get a peace out, fellas?
Peace out, fellas.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of Combos Over Cold Brew. Big shout out to Riley F for supporting the podcast. I give one of my supporters a shout out in each episode. So if you're interested in supporting, it's super easy. It's just the Anchor platform, and the link is in the show notes. And if you want a free way to support that really helps the podcast, I really appreciate if you rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps grow it organically. And I just love like reading your guys' reviews. It seriously makes my day, and just hearing your thoughts about the podcast. If you want to be up to date on episodes or even submit listener questions, follow Combos Over Cold Brew Pod on Instagram. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will hear from you guys in the next one. Peace out, fellas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.